So just in case if there's any confusion here for impacts of pressure on Barrett fermentation. I'm Shauna Cormier. I'm the secretary of the AHA Governing Committee. And it is my pleasure to be here to introduce these two speakers. So we have Jonah Greenbaum Schinder. There you are. Wave your hand. Okay. And so Jonah approached, this is Escarpment Yeast Labs. So you approach them as an avid homebrewer, hoping to improve the availability and shelf life of their homebrew yeasts. And through his role as a homebrew specialist, Jonah has helped them expand to more homebrew shops and improve our homebrew packaging and sales strategies to get more exciting yeast into the hands of homebrewers, which is very exciting, I think. We love yeast. Okay, here's Chris. Hey. So Chris is a quality assurance tech at Escarpment Yeast Labs in, oh my goodness, I don't know how to pronounce this. In,
how do you think, say it.
No. How do you?
Guelph?
Yes!
Is that right?
No, it's Guelph.
Guelph. I was so excited that I did it right.
Very famous also said that.
So oh, totally okay. Funny. So I'm with famous people. That's great. So it's in Ontario, Canada. Just kidding, Canada, where he focuses on ensuring that product makes it out to pro brewers across Canada. He has a background in software, which he has used to help improve and automate business processes. His favorite beer styles are Weissbier and Bavarian and Bohemian style lagers. You're in good company. Okay, just a little few housekeeping things. Turn your cell phones on vibrate, and if you have any funny jokes you need to tell someone, just go back there. Besides that, here we are. Let's learn about Barrett and fermentation.
All right. Can you all hear? Woo. Too close. Not close enough. Okay. So welcome. Thanks for coming to our talk about impacts of pressure on Barrett fermentation. I'm Jonah. This is my colleague, Chris. We're going to get going. So I'm the homebrew lead at Escarpment Labs. I brew a lot of Saison and pale ales are kind of my go-tos. I've been doing particularly a lot of mixed firm Saisons with Brett. Find me at the Milk the Funk meeting. I'll be pouring some of those. Favorite lager yeast would probably be our Biergarten strain. And ales, New World Saison, which is a blend of two North American Saison strains and a Brett strain as well. Other things I'm interested in terms of fermentation are koji and tempeh, sourdough, and trying to be funny around the office.
My picture's not there. Oh, well. This is me. I'm quality and automation. So I do, aside from making sure that our stuff is good to leave the facility and it's all good throughout the entire process, I'm also involved in automating a lot of our processes to make our lives easier so we can do more with the same amount of people. Almost all the beer I brew is below 5%, and it's my favorite styles are German-style wheat beers and lagers. Isar Lager is my favorite lager strain, and Voss is my go-to ale strain whenever I want to brew something fast. And it's one of my favorite Kvike strains. I'm into fermented foods as well, and then low alk. So I've really, really gotten into low alcohol products in the last year or so. So low alk beer, low alk or kombucha, and then water kefir. So this is Guelph. I figured we'd zoom out a bit just so you have a bit of an American reference to know where we are. So, and I also find it really funny that Mississauga is the thing that got highlighted instead of Toronto. So we're just a little bit northwest of Toronto. It's about an hour. It's fine. We're about an hour and a half drive out of Toronto to get to Guelph, and It's a bit of a booming brewing city now. So one of the original breweries that are there is Sleeman. You maybe heard of them. They make this really, really good cream ale. They got shut down back during Prohibition because they weren't paying their taxes. So what's the inspiration for this entire let's do bread under fermentation thing? So this is Richard. How many of here know of Richard Preece? He was pretty active back when he was still in school, but then the lab got kind of picked up, and he's been really, really busy. He spent the last month in Europe just drinking Kolsch. So he's our boss, and he likes to do science. So people, he was like talking to us in the lab once. He's like, people say that putting bread under pressure makes funkier beer. We should like test that and find out if that's actually true. So, and also we have a really good relationship with the University of Guelph, and they have access to a lot of really cool technology. So we can send our samples there, and aside from running it through sensory panel, we can actually get a computer to tell us what's in those compounds, which is super neat. So first off, for any of you here who don't know what funk is, funk is a blanket term that we usually use for the flavor characteristics often associated with alternative fermentation. Usually comes from a combination of three microbe groups, Brett, lacto, and pedio. This is generally considered a flaw in a lot of breweries. So a clean brewery, if they get Brett in there, they probably won't be able to sell the product. Maybe they'll try to like spin it, or sometimes they'll end up with this like Band-Aid bomb that they'll maybe try to spin, or they'll throw it out if they have any standards. So I went and perused. I just like looked up on Facebook a couple of things about like Brett under pressure. So this is from the wiki. It's speculated that the extra pressure of the bottles helps create that Brett complexity. That's what's kind of causing it to go on. Devin H did a little experiment. He said, I split a batch of co-pitched wort, fermented one in a glass carboy, the other one in a keg at 15 PSI. And then I shared it with my club, and the Brett beer or the pressure beer definitely wasn't funkier. And the no pressure beer surprisingly seemed to have a more distinctive Brett character. Someone in their pro brewery, on shorter terms, they want to make a funkier beer, so they go and they will co-pitch their sack and Brett, and then to get more funk out of it, they'll let it sit in a keg and age for 2 to 4 weeks to kind of bring out that funk character. And then I found another comment. This one was really interesting, is no research to my knowledge. Some pro brewers and home brewers have seen anecdotal quickening of the maturation process. And like I'm looking through this, I'm like, oh my God, none of my emojis are working. Fuck. Okay. It was... So it's speculated, have seen anecdotal. These are contradictory observations, but we have science. So our approach was it's going to be a two-pronged approach. We're going to run it through gas chromatography. This tells us what's actually in those compounds. And then we're also going to run it through our sensory panel. This is people sitting down, drinking these beers blind, and telling us, we have a form we fill out that tells us what we're actually perceiving. The big thing with that is sometimes you can get something, you can pick something up in, like the computer or the gas chromatograph will pick something up, but maybe you don't detect it like that. So human sensory is still a very important part of doing this, because just knowing what is in there is only half of it. Human perception is still a huge part of beer. So what is gas chromatography? It's a device that measures the interaction time of different compounds within the walls of the device, a column. This information is recorded and based on known values that can determine the numeric concentration of what different compounds are. The technology we used is headspace, solid phase, microextraction, gas chromatography, mass spectroscopy. I was told to include that just so everyone knows what kind of gas chromatograph we're using. That's a lot of stuff, but really it's a computer with a really good nose. It's a good way to think about it.
All right. Compounds often seen in funky beer. So we're just going to go through some of the chemical compounds to familiarize you. So what is funk besides a P-Funk concert? Hexanoic acid is a very common one. It's a fatty acid. It's detectable under about 8 ppm. And it's that sweaty, cheesy, Brussels Brett does this a lot, goaty kind of thing. And Chris's best way to replicate this is leave your goat cheese out for 2 weeks, and you will know what we're talking about. Ethyl butyrate is an ester. Its detection is about 300 ppb. It's that classic, like, overripe pineapple, mango. Brett D does this a lot. Tropical fruit, so leave some pineapple or mango out when it's like right before it goes bad, even maybe it's gone a little bad. That's what we're talking about. 4, vinyl guaiacol is a phenol. It's about 300 ppb for detection. It's like a classic clove and nutty, spicy smells, flavors. Clove, spice, and cooked buckwheat are good replicants for this. 4, ethyl phenol is a phenol. Its detection is about 400 ppb. It's that classic horse blanket, barnyard, has a bit of spice and smoke and medicinal characteristics as well. Go to a farm, smell some hay. Also, fermented strawberries for that like super medicinal thing that can be really hit and miss. 4-ethyl glycol is a phenol. Its detection is about 600 ppb. It's smoke, spice, and clove, but more in the campfire domain than the kind of allspice direction. So our hypothesis was that by fermenting the same wort under pressure or under different conditions, that we should be able to taste the amount of funkiness of these beers. So we put together an experiment and had wort co-pitched across the board, same yeast, 15 psi for the entire fermentation, 15 psi after 2 weeks, and no pressure, like a traditional blow-off. So wort production, we each made about 40 liters. Mine was about 1052. Chris's was about 1040. And grain bill was the same, Pilsner, Munich, and white wheat. First wort hopping of Magnum and a traditional Whirlpool hop. About 20. We fermented these in the lab, so about 23 to 27 degrees. Our variables that were different were the OG, the yeast we used, that we didn't brew, like it's not the same wort, so that is a variable. So my brew was using our New World Saison blend. As I mentioned, it's two sac strains and... that's a lie. two sac strains and two Brett strains, maybe. And Chris's is our Old World blend, which is two traditional Saison yeasts, and he also added Brett L and Brett B, which are traditional Belgian mixed firm Bretts. So we can see the purple line is the median for them. So they...
the purple line is where we... that's when, for those two-week beers, that was the point where we turned them from open fermentation to closed fermentation.
I take it back. But we can see it's like a relatively similar timeline for hitting our terminal gravity before we added pressure or threw them in bottle. So after primary fermentation, we force carbed everything because we didn't want to deal with bottle adding dextrose and trying to figure out, because 15 psi pressure beer was very much carbonated at that point. So we just threw it all on pressure for a week. We pulled samples of the fresh beer and froze it down so that when we were ready in 4 months to do GC, we would have that raw sample to run tests on as well. And then 4 month beers were sampled and collected for GC 4 months later. Before sending it out, we sterofiltered everything just to make sure that we were only getting the actual beer and nothing beyond that.
Ooh, all right.
Production evaluated at 2 points, initial after carbonation and then the 4 months after bottle aging warm. We use quantitative descriptive analysis to kind of demonstrate what we had found. So that's neat, but let's see the numbers.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to focus on a few sections. So we get the output from the gas chromatography is a lot, and some of the things just aren't relevant. So we decided to focus on three main areas. We're going to focus on those phenols, so those smoky and clove characters, the esters, and then the fatty acids. So the first thing we're going to look at is we're going to look at the New World blend of the esters. So we have our three ester compounds here. So ethyl butyrate, ethyl, which is pineapple, ethyl decanoate, a melony kind of thing, and then ethyl hexanoate, which is a red apple. And what we can see here is if we just look at left to right, you can... I wish this pointer worked. They're in pairs. So it's the New World, the pressure 15 psi, half psi, or the 2 week pressure, and then no pressure. And what we can see first off is over time, a lot of these esters are decreasing. There's an anomalous thing here going on with that 2 week pressure one. Which is a little bit weird, but in general, we are seeing that there's a decrease in ester concentrations over time. This makes sense. Esters are volatile. Over time, those esters are aging out, and we know this already from beer. We make a beer, it's super delicious, and then a month or two later, it doesn't taste the same anymore because those esters have kind of died down from aging. Another thing that's a little bit interesting is we are seeing that there is a bit more, there's some more esters going on in the beer that didn't undergo that pressure fermentation. If we look at the phenols, and something to point out here, those black lines, these are the sensory thresholds for each of those. So what we did is we plotted it out and then we just drew a black line in there so we can see that for ethyl decanoate and ethyl hexanoate, these were both above the human perceptible limit, but that ethyl butyrate was below it. So even though these are increased concentrations of esters, they might not get picked up during sensory panel unless we have like super tasters who can actually pick up these things at lower concentrations. For phenols, 4VG was something we didn't mention. We did a single infusion mash. So something to note is none of this stuff, like we didn't do anything to have more phenol precursors in there. So we saw from 4VG, all of it's across the board drastically below concentration. And again, we're seeing for the 15 PSI and the no PSI, a bit of a decrease in that 4EG, that smoky character. And again, this weird trend of over time, that half pressure one is showing a slight increase. Hexanoic acid, again, is below threshold. Also, all of these are quite close to each other. And then we are seeing in the no pressure ones, over time, they got a little bit more octanoic acid. And then in the no pressure one, there was a decrease. But if we look at it, it's more like what's happening is they are normalizing toward, like, the end result was they were roughly the same in terms of flavor versus like a massive increase or a massive decrease. But we did notice that on that no pressure one, it was funkier than the, like, according to these numbers, it was funkier than the other two. So I decided to take those numbers and do a delta on them to see what the change is. One thing to note here is that it looks like the 4VG has this massive increase, but if we were to go back and look at that graph, it's all of it's below the flavor threshold, and that's only an increase in a difference of 5 ppbs. So it's really nothing interesting is going on there. And then we are seeing for most of our esters a decrease over time, and again, it's really weird, but that half pressure one is doing something, and it's bizarre. This is the one I did. We didn't have enough time to actually run it through the 4 month. So what we did is we just ran that 1 month trial through GC. So again, Brett B&L don't make ethyl butyrate, I guess, and then or a lot of it. And then we saw more ester. The ones that didn't undergo as much pressure had more esters, except for this ethyl hexanoate. But that's like the red apple thing. I don't know. And then for 4EG, that half-pressure one is, again, standing out. So there's something weird going on with that half-pressure, and we're not totally sure. But what's kind of neat about this is Jonah's experiment saw it, and mine did, and they were completely different worts. So there might be something here that we can possibly look into. And octanoic acid, again, a little, they're all above threshold, but the high pressure and no pressure are roughly the same, and then there's this like increase in that cheesy goaty thing going on in that half pressure. So what was tasted?
All right, so at work we have we run sensory a couple times a month. It's a 10 to 15 person sensory depending on who's around the office. Samples are given random numbers, and the members of the team show up to taste them and fill out an online form for data collection with I think a 1 to 5 scale and questions about tropical fruits, red fruits. It runs the gamut of funk. So it's just worth noting that because obviously we can't do all of these samples on the same day, you can't test a 1-month-old beer, and then that same beer has to be 4 months old. So you know, smells of the day, if you're in a different mood, time of day, depending on what you had for lunch, all these things can kind of affect your sensory panel's integrity. So these are the the raw data that we got from our sensory panel. And that's the data that we pulled out in terms of sensory. Pretty neat stuff, I would say. But let's peer into the individual data points a little bit more. So New World Brett, or the New World Blend at 15 PSI, blue is the 1 month, four is the 4 month. So you can see that there's a growth. Interestingly enough, astringency went up, which doesn't necessarily make sense. But you can see Cheesy Goaty is going up, and Funky Medicinal. So there, it's spreading out, and we know this. If you bottle condition Brett beer, it's going to get more pronounced as time goes on. 15 PSI after 2 weeks kind of has a bit more of a drastic pull, again, towards astringency, which is weird, but apple pear goes way up. Acetic goes up as well. Funky medicinal in a, I would say, a more pronounced way, which is, again, we keep kind of coming back to that. That's interesting. There's probably something there. And then no pressure as well is pretty robust. It again, you can see there's consistency across our sensory panel that we're continue to pick up high astringency. Funky apple pear, funky barnyard are all increasing as time goes on. No, this is me again. I forget what this is. New World under various conditions at, well, oh yeah, this is all of the 1 month. So you can see overall they're pretty similar in terms of how they were tasted. Maybe full pressure is a little bit more apple-y, maybe no pressure is a little bit more spicy, but there's no drastically obvious indicators here that one is better than the other. And then at 4 months again, we can see it expands out, but it's pretty level. The astringency is pretty similar across the board. Bitterness stays relatively the same. Maybe there's a little bit more acetic from the half pressure, a little bit more medicinal from the no pressure. But we're in the same sphere for all of these beers at this point.
So this one's mine. Underneath, so this is why it's important to give your beers to people. So what we're seeing here is I made a really bad beer. I made a really bad Saison that's bitter and malty. That's the main conclusion of the beer I made. So don't make my beer. I made a really bad Saison. But a few of the things here. So it's I believe I brewed this with Guelph water. We are seeing a little bit of astringency going on there. And then on the orange one, which is the half pressure, you can kind of see it. There's a bit of goatiness going on with that half pressure one that was picked up in our sensory panel. Now, another thing to do is let's see how our sensory panel compared to the gas chromatograph. So a good thing to know is, how calibrated are you? Did we pick up that funk? So at that New World Brett at 1 month, the big thing is they picked up a bit of apple tropical, or they picked up a bit of the pineapple tropical, which is the ethyl butyrate. And as we can see, the interestingly enough, we picked it up on the half pressure one more. Maybe we're a little bit off there, but again, we're getting that fruity apple character going on. Both the half pressure or the full pressure and the no pressure had increased levels of that. And then again, the bitternesses were all in line, so which we can't pick up. We didn't do IBU testing on it. Again, for that New World Brett at 4 months, we picked up some of that apple pear, which is the ethyl decanoate. Again, it was roughly the same on those. And then the other interesting one is they picked up on that cheesy goaty, which is the octanoic acid, which was a little bit stronger on that half pressure. New World Brett's, we're seeing a massive increase in that 4EG, which the panel did pick up on that smoky character. And then we also picked up a little bit of that cheesy goaty octanoic acid on that half pressure as well. So some of the trends that we sort of are thinking. So the concentration of esters dissipate over time due to volatility. Beers that underwent pressure seem to have lower concentrations of some esters across both trials. There isn't a massive difference in the funky characteristics in the beers placed under pressure. And in the second experiment, our panel noticed a slightly funkier beer in the half-pressure experiment. And that is also backed up by that gas chromatography data. Once again, we have to keep in mind that the New World experiment and that Old World plus Brett L and Brett B experiment are drastically different wort streams. So again, we come back to those quotes. I pitched that wort into the keg at 15 PSI. We compared it to each other. And the club, no one noticed really anything funkier, but in the no pressure beer, it seemed to have a more distinctive Brett character. Sometimes on shorter terms, I co-pitch that sack to coax more funk out of it. So are beers under pressure necessarily funkier? Probably not.
But it does seem that beer fermented under pressure can be less estery. Fewer esters maybe equals less noise, and that allows funky characteristics to become more noticeable. It could be. But I want a funkier beer, you say. Ways to increase funk in general would be using phenolic yeast strains that can add to a funky perception, as well as increase the presence of funky precursors. As we mentioned, this is a single infusion beer for both of us, but the addition of a ferulic acid rest would definitely bring out those precursors and allow for more funk to be generated. And fermenting warm for increased ester production, including those funky esters that we talked about, are all ways to make it funky in here. So where do we go with this? With the data we have right now, it's pretty hard to make a firm conclusion. But across both experiments, we didn't see any obvious trends. The most interesting thing I think we saw is this half pressure after 2 weeks throwing a spunding valve on seemed to do something. So what we'd like to do at this point is scale down our batches so that we can use one consistent wort stream and test a whole bunch of variables. I think at that point we would avoid sensory and just do GC to have hard scientific data about this. And then, you know, broadening the scope of which SAC and Brett combos we're using. This would also allow us to have tighter controls to really unify this data. Each one of these could be their own little project, so it's something we're planning on working on the year ahead. Now go forth and be funky. If you have any questions, feel free to come up to the mic. That's it. That's all.
I have a question. I'm just wondering how even these small changes you're seeing or with the esters, how you can separate the impact of pressure versus the more anaerobic fermentation you'll have in a CO2-based purged wort or partially fermented wort versus your more oxygen exchange you'd have in a carboy or a plastic bucket or a barrel.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So what difference would this have? So the nice thing is these were all fermented in kegs. So they were all fermented in the same vessel. They were all sealed. The good thing about that is it means that we didn't have a lot of oxygen exchange going on versus what if we were to do this versus comparing a barrel, say, versus fermenting in stainless. What would the impact of that be? Because there will be something going on with that oxygen exchange as well, right? So that is a good question, and I don't know how we would necessarily tackle that because those are completely different environments, and I think something that could be interesting is like micro dosing oxygen in, but that could also create like super crappy beer. So, but that would be another way to possibly approach it is trying to figure out a way to engineer oxygenation into it versus relying on wood or the permeability of plastic to allow oxygen to get into the vessel. And then also figuring out how you would track that. How do you quantify oxygen, that oxygen transfer, right? So that's a really hard variable that would be really tough to nail down, but it is definitely an aspect of what causes beer to get funky. So, yes.
Yeah, just observing obviously the biological relationship between Brettanomyces and Saccharomyces. I'm just curious if you guys were thinking about in the future trying this again of looking at like 100% Brettanomyces fermentation as well?
We could. So the big thing is, and we deal with this a lot with commercial brewers, is they're like, I want to do a Brett beer. And we're like, cool, what do you want to use? They're like, I want to make it with Brett C. And we're like, no, that doesn't work. So really, there's only a handful of Bretts we could do this experiment with. Brett D is a big one. That would be something to look into. But I feel like a big aspect of Brett D are those esters, like that ethyl, like that mango, pineapple, and if you're putting it under pressure, you might be actually suppressing that. So it might end up resulting in a beer that ends up being less funky in that Brett D kind of sense. So you could be doing yourself a disservice by trying that. It's something we can do because we almost everything, like whenever we could do an experiment like this, do like 3 1-liter brews and ferment them in plastic bottles and then send them to gas chromatography, package it up, and then run it through sensory panel. Like we could do that and see what happens. And also, if we were to scale it down, we could also do it in triplicate to increase that confidence. So, but that is something that we could look into. But it's very much you have to find Brett strains that work well. And also, we also want a Brett strain that's fast. Doing it with Brett L, it's already a pain in the ass to grow Brett L. So that could end up being a project that just to get the data out would take 8 months. So we'd have to specifically figure out what strains to do it with.
Question about your sensory panel process. Did you do other things other than just the 1 to 5 sensory analysis? Did you do any triangle testing to see if people
could
pick out?
We are not a fan of triangle testing.
Yeah.
we do not. Triangle testing is good for calibrating your sensory panel. So let's say you want to calibrate your sensory panel on how to pick up diacetyl. What you would do is you would do multiple, like, and the thing is, I went to Niagara College and we did a bunch of stuff there. And one of the things we did is we were doing off flavor calibration. And what it was is you're given like six triangles of the same compound randomly. So like what you do is by doing that, you're increasing the confidence. And also they were at different concentrations. So aside from it being just one of them is different, it's one of them is different, but it might be two of them are dosed with diacetyl and the other one is clean, and can you detect that difference as well? So we don't do that. We prefer to use the descriptive analysis instead, just because we can kind of get more useful data out of it. Right now, our panel, I believe Richard found, the ASBC has a really good article on how to build out a sensory program. So we're going to be actually buying the compounds and building out our own sensory kits so that we can do more sensory training at the lab. So I've done the BJCP sensory training kits, but those are very expensive. And at the lab, we want to be able to like keep training ourselves. So we're going to try to find a way to drive that cost down for us. Any other questions?
I guess the question, first question is, were the Saccharomyces that you used in the co-pitch, were they all POF positive?
Yeah. So New World is a combination of two sac strains, two European sac strains. One is absolutely, they are both POF positive, but one is more POF positive than the other. And of Old World, and then the New World is definitely POF positive. And we can tell, like, we have special, our WLN gets dosed with ferulic acid, so we can actually, whenever you go to open up the plate, you just smell like campfire. So we, like 100%, they are all POF positives. But what we think is going on is because we did that single infusion, there wasn't enough POF precursor there to actually result in creating a lot more of that for, like, that clove thing.
And the other question would be consideration to go in and measuring some of the precursors that may or may not be feeding the Brett. In other words, if your yeast is producing some type of 4VG or something else that's a precursor to 4EG or some other pathway, to try and measure along the fermentation to see is this
I think what we would do with that is we would probably keep our wort and then include that in the gas chromatography, because then we can see what's in there before it gets fermented, right? And then we can see the difference, and that's probably what we would do.
But also looking like 1 week in, when really the only thing that's happened is Saccharomyces has kind of eaten its way through.
Oh, you're saying like doing, we could also, if we were to do that small lab, like,
yeah,
yes, we could do that. We would, yeah, actually, so we would probably do that. that ends up in experiment explosions where we end up with lots and lots of, but it is, it would be, this is why each one of these things are an experiment on their own, and we have a dedicated researcher who does all of this stuff, and it's like, it's bonkers. Like, it explodes really fast.
Yeah, because I think at the end of the day, one of our problems is our understanding of Brett, and is it actually it fermenting something creating, or is it Brett that's
Yeah, is it more, it's
else?
Like something's creating the precursors, and then there's that symbiotic relationship where it's taking those precursors. Yeah, exactly. Yes?
I promise they didn't plant me with this question, but for those of us who aren't familiar with escarpment, what products should we look for to make funky beer that you guys make?
All right, so the question is, will you please pitch escarpment to everybody? So, right now, we do have a fairly extensive Brett program. We initially started off being known for our funky products. I think the big thing is we have a few interesting products that people might be interested in to create funky beer. So we have the New World Saison Blend, which is a big one that we like to use. Fruit Bomb, which is the same sacks from New World, but includes a couple different Bretts. We have this special blend called Mothership, which is a blend of all of the Bretts we make. We've recently started monetizing one of those Berliner Bretts, which can be used for bottle-aged Berliner Weiss. And I'm trying to think of other... And we also do, like, we have, like, a Belgian Sour Blend, which is a blend of a bunch of traditional Belgian Bretts and Belgian yeast and PDO. Not yeast, Belgian Bretts, Belgian Lacto, and Belgian PDO, or PDO commonly associated with that. What else? We have lots of stuff. Oh, and then we, like, do, like, Lacto Blends and stuff like that. But that's more for kettle souring. So I'd say... talk to your homebrew shops about getting the super fancy stuff. Also, we can probably actually get it to America, because that's a big thing, too, is getting our stuff out here has been a big challenge because the order size, like, America's 10x the size of Canada, so it's a much bigger market to fulfill. But those would be, and I'd say just go take a look at our website. We have a strain collection, and just go down to the funky area, and you can see some of the stuff there. But I'd say Mothership and the two Fruit Bomb and New World Saison blends are probably the ones to check out for some interesting stuff that is unique to us. Oh, and also, you can still ask your question. Everyone's been super shy. If you see Jonah or myself, just tell us to Kvike the World and we'll hook you up. Yes?
So, I don't know if this is on. Great presentation. I know there's a lot of data in there. My question is, did you run any statistical analysis on the gas chromatography to see... I know you show relative changes, but in terms of statistical significance, did you look at any of that?
So everything was not. So yes, this is everything was not run in triplicate, which would have increased that confidence. So this was very much a homebrew style experiment. We were just curious. Also, we had this kind of on the back burner, and then we found out, and we're like, oh shit, we have to like actually get this going now. So that's why we want to. If we were to do it again, we would actually scale it down, break it out, so we can run things in triplicate to improve that confidence. A lot of the stuff that happens in Guelph, because they are real scientists, they do everything in triplicate, or at least duplicate. That's kind of what they do. But yeah, we would like to, if we figure that this is worth going into more, and it can just be a side project for us, we would probably push it out into being done in triplicate to give us more confidence in those numbers, 100%.
But just because my understanding is that, you know, there's fruitier Bretts and there's funkier Bretts. And does the New World strain that contains, like, funkier Bretts, I guess?
I haven't used...
He was saying, like, POF positive and...
So the SAC is POF positive. Yeah. I haven't... I'm a lager guy.
Okay.
So Jonah and Richard use it a lot, and they might know more about it.
I don't get, like, I get some fruit. If you find me at the Milk the Funk, I'll have one of those beers, so you can try it. But it's more on the, it's like, you're not going to get mango pineapple out of this Brett. You're going to get more funk, a bit of floral notes, and kind of in that sphere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, if you're looking for the fruitier stuff, Brett D, maybe the New World Bretts. Fruit Bomb Bretts are both very fruity. And then if you're looking for more of the traditional, like I'd say like the, I prefer the more, if I'm doing Brett beer, I prefer the more traditional Bretts. Brett L, Brussels Brett, those are the ones that I'd say, like if I wanted to make more of that like cherry pie sort of the stuff I'd associate with Cancion, or I'd associate with like the De La Seine Brusselensis, those are the ones that I would go for if I wanted to make a more traditional Belgian funkier beer.
But I meant more so like in when you're studying it. So if you had used a Brett that typically doesn't produce those like phenolic flavors.
Oh, like you're saying like that approach where it's like if I don't want a funkier beer, use Cali, or if I want a funkier beer, use like French Saison. Is that what you're thinking? Or
I'm kind of just saying like, say you just brewed this beer. Like, would you have expected the New World Saison to be funkier or like not give off a lot of funk, just more like fruity? So by putting the pressure on it, like, would it cause it to change, like, how it came out, I guess? No.
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
And you didn't, but you didn't test one that typically is more fruity than funky.
So.
You know what I mean? Because you guys made two different beers. So, like.
Yeah. So what I wanted. So what Jonah did is Jonah took the New World blend, and that's, like, more of our, like. What I did is I wanted to try doing a more traditional, Brett blend, and Jonah took New World. We didn't try doing it with Brett D. It would be that's where this thing comes out, where we would branch out to doing across like intriplicate across different strains, to doing like Brett D pressure, no pressure, full pressure, and like all that kind of stuff, right? So it would be it's where this project explodes in scope that we would do it. Eventually, is kind of where I'm going with it. But we were just like, hey, what strains do we want to test? And I was like, I want to try using the more traditional Bretts. And Jonah's like, I'm going to do it with New World. And that's kind of what we did. We just wanted to kind of do it for fun. So. Sure.